Blog Talk Radio.
There we go. Good evening, folks. My name is Stuart Thompson. Welcome to Personal Transformation. I'm broadcasting live from the Gatehouse, as I like to do. First, a couple of things before we get going. I have my my guest here tonight, Rick, which is going to be talking about his he offered to talk about his story and his journey through his healing journey. Rick, I'm having a really rough time here getting going. Anyway, let me get started again. Anyway, welcome. And tonight, my guest is Rick, which we're going to talk about his healing journey, recovery, all kinds of different things that are very, very important. Man stuff. Stuff you wouldn't think you're going to hear, but you're going to hear about it. I just have a couple things I want to get out of the way. We have our conference coming up, which will be on June the 1st. Please go onto our website at thegatehouse.org, and you'll get all the details in regards to what's going on with that. We have our 20th anniversary coming up. Excuse me, on June the 21st. So lots of stuff going on. Excuse me. Boy, I'm off to a really great start. And what else do I need to say? Yes. First off, this is very, very important. I'm not here to tell you what you should or shouldn't do. I'm not a doctor, a physician, or anything of the sort, or a psychologist or a therapist. I'm here offering my own experiences healing at the Gatehouse. And my own, I'm not going to tell you what to do, but I'm offering you what I went through and what I've done. And the choice is really yours, what you do to take care of yourself. But first off, taking care of yourself is very, very important. So if you feel triggered in any way from what we're talking about, just please turn the dial off or make sure you're with a friend or somebody, but take care of yourself. Your self-care is most important. So folks, we're just going to dive right into it. Rick is my second guest for my segment. I'm going to have, well, I said 4 to 5 weeks where I'm going to have male survivors come in here talking about their experience and their healing journey. And Rick is number two. And welcome, Rick.
Hi, Stuart. How are you doing?
Excellent.
Good. I'm glad to be here.
And thank you. And one thing I should point out, too, as well, Rick, not only is he part of the Gatehouse, but I've had the pleasure of facilitating with Rick as well. Actually, we just finished a group back in would have been April, right? Was it April?
I think we finished maybe March.
Yeah, it was before March.
Sometime in March.
Yeah, it was good. So Rick has been around here a while, but I'm going to let him tell you. So I'm just going to dive right in. Again, welcome, Rick. And if you could just tell us your story. Well, what brought you to come to the Gatehouse?
Okay. Well, I was abused, sexually abused, by a family member, an extended family member. At a young age, so I wasn't really aware of the abuse till I was about 20 years old. But the abuse really showed itself in how I felt and how I acted, and you know, in school and things like that. I wasn't socializing well. I wasn't getting along with people. I wasn't connecting, and I didn't know why. I was always in trouble with the teachers. I was always, in fights with my peers, and at home as well. It just seemed like I had two younger brothers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the oldest of three, and I think they said to each other, whatever Rick is doing, if we do the opposite, we'll be okay.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's, so I was in trouble, and nobody knew why. My parents often wondered what they did to deserve a kid like me. And really what was going on is I was very confused and full of anxiety and fear and anger over being abused as a 2.5-year-old. And of course, you repress those feelings and you don't really know why what's going on is going on. And the first time I had any sort of memory or inkling of what was going on was my early 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And I started getting flashbacks of the abuse, and I didn't really even know it was abuse at the time. I didn't look at it as abuse. It was a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And the conventional wisdom, unfortunately, 30 plus years ago, was that, you know, even boys weren't really capable of being abused, you know, that we didn't feel this stuff as deeply, and it wouldn't, you know, even though no one wants a child to be sexualized, that for some reason, you know, once the boy became a man, that was all in the past. And that's really the way I looked at it. I knew it had happened. I told my parents about it. I don't know whether they believed me or not. We really didn't talk about it. You know, I mentioned it the one time. You know, I had the flashbacks for, you know, a few months, I guess. And then I just forgot about it, and I swept it under the rug.
Can I ask you a question in regards to the flashbacks?
Sure.
So were your flashbacks really, really, like, vivid, like, real?
Absolutely vivid.
Okay, I think this is important.
Yes, absolutely vivid. And I knew how old I was, where we were living.
Mm-hmm.
I had an image of the person who was doing it and what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, knew that this happened more than once. And, yeah, they were absolutely vivid, you know. Although I was, you know, shocked at first, enough to tell my parents about it
yeah.
in my early 20s, I hadn't been living at home in quite some time, still didn't think that it was something that would affect me or was affecting me. Mm-hmm. And it was affecting me. You know, I started drinking alcoholically and using drugs at an early age. I had my first drink at 13. And my first drug at 14, and was using those to escape the feelings I was having, not knowing where these feelings came from.
Mm-hmm.
I think for me, that's the worst part about it, was not knowing where the feelings were coming from. you know, it's a blessing and a curse, depending. Some people live through it, and they're at an older age, and they know why it happened, but you know, it's constantly, I guess, on their minds, because I've talked to so many people. I've been here at the Gatehouse for 5 years now. And, you know, but for someone like me, it was a real mystery as to why I was feeling the way I was
yeah.
feeling. And what I was escaping from, I had no idea. I didn't even know I was drinking or using drugs, you know, in a way that was, you know, going to be very, very bad for me. Come years later.
Were you, so did your parents leave you when you told them?
My mother, I thought at that time it was a babysitter. And so I told my mother, you know, and my father didn't say a word. We were in the car.
Mm-hmm.
I was in the back seat. I don't even know what his reaction was.
I guess I'm just curious if
yeah.
you were validated in any way.
No,
I guess, such a young age,
no.
Right?
And
being, as you were talking
yeah.
about, our age and the way we're brought up, we just didn't talk about that stuff, right?
No, my mom said, oh, she wouldn't do something like that.
Mm.
And my father didn't say a word. And that was it. You know, I talked about it. I told them what was going on. I said, you know, I have these flashbacks. Of being abused.
Yeah.
I know where it was. It's very vivid. I explained it to them. I probably talked for about 10 minutes. And no, I wasn't validated. No, not at all. And at that point, I thought, okay, it's in the past. We'll just forget about it. Meanwhile, I was a full-blown alcoholic by that time and didn't realize it. I just thought I'd like to go out and drink.
Mm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't. Okay. Well, you know, again, this is 30 years ago, and you know, I wasn't homeless. Although I had been before that,
mm-hmm.
My parents had asked me to leave at 16. I was that unruly. And so I was homeless and for a time. But at the time where I realized this, I wasn't homeless. I had a job. I wasn't drinking out of a brown paper bag, you know, and all those stereotypes of a person who's alcoholic, they weren't there. So I didn't think I was an alcoholic. I just thought, I like to drink and go out and have a good time. But this is all, you know, trying to cope with the anxieties and the depression and from the childhood sexual abuse, which I didn't know was affecting me. So I knew by that point it had happened. I thought, hey, it happened. I was a kid. What can I do? Let's get on with life. But I didn't know it was still affecting me. You know, I had no clue about that. So I met the woman that I was to marry at 25. And we were married at 30. And shortly after, we had our first child. And, you know, I got into business for myself. So life got busy. And, you know, raising family and trying to have the white picket fence and the house and all that kind of stuff, you know, was my priority, even though I was a very angry person and at times and was suppressing my emotions still with drugs and alcohol. And that's a big part of my story, trying to cope with the abuse. But I didn't know I was trying to cope with the abuse. As early as 5 years into our relationship, I told just before we were going to get married, I told you know, my wife to be that I was using a lot of drugs, and I was very scared. And you know, I thought that I had a huge problem. And I did. And I went and got some counseling for that, but didn't realize alcohol was a problem too. So it was just a couple of years after that, that, you know, I went on a major, major bender. I didn't eat, sleep for a week. I just used drugs and alcohol, and I could have died. You know, and psychologically, that that bender, you know, probably still affects me today because I lost 35 pounds. I was using, you know, drugs to stay awake and then the alcohol to, you know, try to balance out. And that's very stressful on the mind and the body.
Very hard on the body.
Yeah. I was hospitalized and went to detox. But, you know, I joined a sport group, but, it wasn't a 12-step based group. And, so although I stayed abstinent, for a short while, it didn't help. So again, not knowing what the problem was, I just kept going back to my solution, which was burying my feelings. So,
so what you're saying here now, what did alcohol and the drugs, or it didn't really matter as long as it was something, right?
I generally had to be drunk before I could use drugs.
Drugs.
Yeah. That would calm me down enough.
Yeah.
And the drugs, I think, would let me drink longer.
Yeah, of course, I can attest to that as well.
Yeah. The drugs I was using were were uppers, that sort of thing. I don't need to go into exactly what it was, but if it was there, I would try it. You know, I was a risk taker for sure. That as well, risky behaviors.
Yes.
You know, which we've both seen doing facilitating groups here. You know, a lot of people engage in risky behavior because it's a way, again, to outrun our feelings.
Or cope.
You know, exactly. It's a way to cope. And yeah, alcohol was my coping mechanism for sure, first and foremost. And that was my we call it a, you know, drug of choice, right? So it was 3 years, 3.5 years after this big binge that I started using one of the softer drugs. You know, my neighbor was using it. There's another guy down the street. We're all adults, like no big deal. But for me, it is, you know, for me, it led to drinking again. And then it led to, not a week this time, but 5 days. And the only reason it was 5 days is by the time it happened, it was almost 5 years later. I just couldn't do a week physically. I was 5 years older. I just couldn't do it. Mm. I would have. And it was the exact same situation. And that's sort of what opened my eyes to that I had a real problem. And I decided to take other people's advice for a change instead of doing it my way. I went to a treatment center and I joined a 12-step program. And I haven't had a drink or a drug in 15 years now. So that was a big piece of it for me. But I would never have been able to confront my childhood sexual abuse if I wasn't sober, you know. So, you know, it just seemed like there was a plan there for me, and all I had to do was follow it.
You just didn't realize it at the time. Good.
I didn't have a clue.
Yeah.
Didn't have a clue. You know, I didn't know what the gatehouse was or anything else. I was working with a buddy. And he had to leave early on Wednesdays. We were doing some construction work at 3:00. He didn't have a car. And, where are you going? And he told me where he was going. I didn't really know what it was. And I asked him about it. And he was, you know, thank God he was honest with me. He said it's a place where people go to heal who have been abused as children, sexually abused as children. And I said, I was abused as a child, and I didn't think that there was a problem still. But I still feel, even though I've been sober now 10 years, mm-hmm. I still feel something's missing, and I don't connect well with people, and I'm still angry,
mm-hmm.
and I still have problems.
It's to what you said about connection. Now, what kind of difficulties do you have as far as connection is concerned?
Well, I didn't really know how to talk to people. I didn't know how to form friendships.
Mm-hmm.
I used to form all my friendships over drinking and drugs.
Mm-hmm.
So I was connecting with people who may have the same trauma or other types of trauma, mm-hmm. and not knowing it. So there was a connection through the trauma, and then, you know, through this sort of behavior that isn't helping,
mm-hmm.
Either one of us, but that was some sort of connection, and that's the only connection I had. I didn't have a very good connection with my children. I didn't have a very good connection with my wife. I was just going through the motions, you know. Although I was present, I know today, you know, looking back, it certainly could have been a different connection. But again, you know, I didn't know I was lacking this. You know, you don't know till you know.
That's right.
You know what I mean? Like it's a weird thing to say that, but you just don't know until you're aware of it.
So that would have included intimacy as well. Then you would have difficulties with that as well.
Absolutely.
But other men need to know this as well. That this is the sort of stuff that we deal with, which stuff that we can't really talk about very openly because we get shut down. Obviously, because we're men. But anyway, I'm sorry.
No, that's exactly the point.
Yeah.
It's not like I'd go next door to my buddy and start talking about intimacy issues.
Yeah.
You know, that just doesn't happen.
No.
And
still doesn't happen.
I don't think it happens today either.
No.
You know, it's one of the last taboos.
That's right.
Talking about, you know, childhood sexual abuse, talking about intimacy issues amongst men. And I think amongst most people, you know, but seemingly, especially men, because of the way we've been brought up.
Yeah.
You know, and I think my father was brought up to, be the head of the household. I think probably love and obey was in the wedding vows at that time. Although my wife refused to say those words,
mm-hmm.
It was still in my mind that's the way it was. I was the leader, you know, like my father. And really, that's some of the things I taught my son as well. You know, so as the leader, you have to be strong. You have to be resilient. And talking about your feelings in that way, deeply, and talking about intimacy is not really the way to be strong and resilient. So I thought, you know? And since coming to the Gatehouse, I've had a big awakening from that. But so no, I didn't have as close a relationship as I would have liked to. And, you know, I had a very hard time on an emotional, intimate level connecting with people. And so it was very superficial. You know, I didn't have close friendships. We had a lot of friends, but it was the bowling league. It was the card league. Yeah. It was parties at our house. It was all this sort of stuff. Never really had a close bond with anyone because I had a secret.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know I had a secret, but I had a secret. And, you know, in the circles I travel now, we say we're only as thick as our secrets. So connections.
So kind of riding off the question that I have involving connection. So, yes, we talked about intimacy, but what about with your children? What was that like?
Well, when they were young.
How was that?
We were very close. Yeah, I had a very good bond with them. As I said before, because of the marriage and kids and career, you know, I was able to function and able to get close to the children when they were young, for sure. They were my world. And, of course, kids are very innocent. And, you know, until they're a certain age and they tell you no for the first time or this and that, you're a god, you know. And, you know, and of course that bodes well with someone who, you know, has these issues because of the child of sexual abuse where you don't want to hear things like, you know, no. You know, some of the issues I ran into were, you know, not wanting to be told, you know, not wanting to be wrong, not wanting to admit I was wrong. Things like that. So although that affected my marriage with young children, you're always right. You know, everything dad says is right, is the truth, is great. So I had, you know, a huge amount of love both for my children and from my children. You know, but...
do you think you learned anything from that with your experience? Or maybe you were just caught in the moment, as like you're saying, you're caught in life. And you weren't able to pick up on some of the innocent things that they didn't have to go through.
Well, you know, it was a period in time where my drinking lessened.
Mm-hmm.
I was the type of person, I didn't drink at home. I went out to drink, thank God. So I, you know, never drove around the kids when they were drunk, when I was drunk or things like that. And not saying that, you know, people that have done that are bad or anything. It just, I was lucky that, they didn't really see dad at his worst. You know, I would drink on a Friday night, come home at,
you know, drinker, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Very late at night.
Yeah.
And sleep in the next morning and, you know, get on with my day. Right. So, they didn't really see that. So for me, you know, It was a period in time that, you know, really helped me, although I didn't know it, you know, I was able to give and receive love to my kids and be with them on that sort of level. And it helped me with my marriage as well, because we were going to split up, before we found out that, you know, my wife was pregnant, you know, so it was already going to be bad news for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the one thing that probably saved my life and saved my sanity was my marriage. Mm-hmm. We've since divorced, so it's my ex-wife. You know, that was made at a time where I was fully awake and fully in touch with my feelings. Mm-hmm. And that's only because of the Gatehouse. You know, that's only because of coming here. So... Yeah, well, I did. It was very, very good, you know, for me, being in that situation, you know, first 5, 8, 10 years, you know, with my kids. They're 5 years apart, so, you know. And I told my children as well, because I wanted them to be aware, and now they're teaching it in the elementary school, you know, which a lot of people are up in arms about. But let's think about it. If one in three women and one in five men have been abused, then one in three people and one in five people are abusers.
Sure.
And they're the people saying, I don't want it in school. And I know there's some religious aspects to this as well. I'm not going to get into that. And I know people have strong opinions on it. But the point is if children know about their bodies and what is appropriate and inappropriate at a young age, then this type of stuff will get reported.
Exactly.
It's only when they don't know that it's wrong and then they're able to be threatened and coerced that this type of stuff goes on, you know, and that's for kids that are older. I mean, at my age, there was no help at all, but this is for kids that are you know, abused at an older age. So I wanted to make sure that my children knew, and my ex-wife as well at the time, you know, I told her about the abuse, you know, at some point before we had the kids. So at an early age, we taught them about their body and things like that, and not to, you know, that this was a private, you know, these are the private parts, and that only they can touch them, you know, and nobody else should, and things like that. And as they got older, into the teenage years, 13 years old, I told my daughter, I think when she was 13, and maybe my son when he was 12. It's funny, the first one, you know, you hesitate on, and then it's like, oh, you know, you realize later that by 12 years old, they're fully awake, you know, and they know. I told them both that I was abused.
Was it hard to tell them that? Or
very difficult. Very difficult.
I hadn't
been in the gatehouse yet. Hmm. My daughter said, if I find out who it is, I'll kill her. And my son was a little less vocal. He and again, it's the male thing, you know. Mm-hmm. He just, okay, Dad, you know. But in that way, I could start talking about it freely.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, I'm just realizing this right now, Stuart. I'm so glad I'm here. That was the beginning of me coming to the gatehouse, you know. Being able to talk about the abuse freely and my feelings, to start to talk about my feelings. And I've received a lot of therapy, you know, before the gatehouse, psychiatrists, psychologists, therapists,
you name it, right?
12-step programs. Addiction services. I think I saw my first psychiatrist at 8 years old. And I was on medication by the time I was I was on medication, Ritalin, for ADD. Meanwhile, it's not ADD.
No, it was
child sexual abuse.
Exactly, there's a big difference.
Yeah, and even if that was diagnosed, there was nothing to do for it, and it would have been the same thing. Well, it doesn't affect boys like it affects
girls. That's right. That's what they would have said then.
That was the wisdom. Up until really, you know, Arthur started the gatehouse, and even then, we know there was a big pushback about men coming into this space. So even 20 years ago, you know, there was a big, even today, but today, fortunately, it's much better.
And it's funny you say that, because Art will be in here next week, and we'll probably talk about exactly what you're talking about. But you're absolutely right. 20 years ago, Art will, again, like I say, he'll probably talk. We'll talk about when that happened. Well, he wanted to bring men to the gatehouse and bring men in here for the program.
Yeah.
People were backing away.
Yeah, sponsors. And
yes,
government.
People were backing away. Well, 20 years later, we're still here.
Yeah.
So Art really more than done something right, because he didn't listen to anybody, and that was a good thing.
Well, I can't imagine what he went through.
No, I couldn't either.
It must have been horrible, because. You know, his situation. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, so yeah, you know, I really appreciate for sure that the gatehouse is here. And I didn't realize at the time that, and I'm just realizing it today, as I say, talking about this and that. And that's the beauty of coming in and doing this sort of thing, is you have to get it out. You know, I know that today, you know, we tend to say, oh, I don't want to think about it, or that triggers me and this happens. We have to get it out. And this is a good, safe place to do it. But so, you know, in talking to my kids and opening up and being honest, I was again able to talk about this. And I started to tell people, you know, when I was in a group, any kind of group, therapy group, 12-step group, anything, I would mention that this had happened to me, and then people would come up and they'd say, oh, that happened to me too. And so I became open to the idea of that
conversation,
that the conversation, and that you know, maybe there was more to this than the alcohol and drug abuse. Maybe I needed further help, and in this area. And then again, you know, I'm working with a fellow who's coming to the gatehouse, and you know, they say when the student is ready, the teacher appears. And he said to me, "Hey, I'm coming here." And it's a great program. And I said to him, oh, well, by the way, I'm a childhood sexual abuse. And at that time, I called myself a victim.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I said, I'm a victim of childhood sexual abuse. And I have been. It re-victimizes. It from my earliest memories of misbehaving in kindergarten, way back in kindergarten, I can remember the teacher scolding me. And calling me out in front of the rest of the class, and all the way through school, you know, I could be getting A's, good marks, but I would still be misbehaving and acting out, you know, and, you know, all the way through school, and then into, married life, taking off, drinking. Sometimes, you know, I'd be home early. Sometimes I wouldn't come home for a day or two. Sometimes it was a week.
On a binge,
you know. And not realizing through all this therapy and talking what the root of the problem was. And it wasn't until I heard it from a friend that I'd known since high school. And you know, I was 47 years old by this time, that I realized, hey, there's something else here that I need to, you know, this may be the real problem, you know. And he said that it had really helped him. He was another fellow that had, you know, alcohol and drug problems.
Mm-hmm.
And he had not been able, and I was sober 10 years by that time. He had not been able to get more than a couple of months together, and now he was a year sober. So got my attention, and that's when I picked up that 50-pound receiver.
Yeah.
And called. Best decision I ever made.
And then your hurting your healing journey started.
That's right. This phase of it, anyway.
This phase of it. This part of it. The phase.
Yeah.
The part that was missing.
That's right. Yeah. Really the bulk of it. You know, really before that, I was treating the symptom. You know, here I was treating the problem. You know, I was getting help for the problem. And I can remember coming. I didn't know where it was. My GPS was sending me somewhere near the X. You know, it just didn't quite, because this building really was resurrected. You know, this building was built 150 years ago, I guess.
150 plus years ago, yeah.
Yeah, and it was resurrected. So really the GPS didn't quite know what to think. And I didn't know it was part of the Humber campus. I don't know it's part of Toronto very well. So, I thought I was going to be late. You know, I'm very anxious. I couldn't find the place. I drove by it probably 3 or 4 times before I realized that this was probably it, because I drove around the campuses. And so by the time I got here, I was a wreck. And I parked and walked up to the steps. And, you know when a new guy is here, they ring the doorbell.
Yeah.
So
right.
I rang the doorbell and somebody opened the door. Now, of course, we just walk in because this is a place of love, right? You know, so... I rang the doorbell, and Roz, who was here earlier, opened the door. Absolutely great lady. And she was so great. Listened to my whole story, just like we're doing now.
Mm-hmm.
So that's was the intake. And because I was living in Newmarket at the time, I was also going to attend my first meeting that night. So we did the intake at 3 p.m. And then I started the phase one men's group at 7 with Ian and John. And that started everything. You know, I was very nervous. I didn't know what to expect. They gave me a book. So, okay, it's a course, maybe, you know. Sat down with, I think we had a big group, 10 or 12 other nervous
men.
Nervous men.
Yeah.
And looking at each other thinking, man, I've told my wife, I've told some people in 12-step program, I've told my kids, but, you know, how can I sit with these men, you know, us men, and talk about something like this?
And strangers to boot, too.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, the facilitators knew what they were doing. You know, they had been through
the
program. So we just started talking. You know, they asked questions, and we introduced ourselves and a little bit about how we're feeling. Boy, that's strange. I don't know how I'm feeling. What are feelings? You know?
Do you remember how you felt the first night coming in here?
Well, yeah. As I said, I was scared.
You're scared, but...
I felt... a lot.
What about with the other men around? Is that's the part? With the stuff we've kind of talked about.
Yeah, I felt weird. You know, I felt like, inappropriate to share this type of stuff.
Mm.
And also I'm not even really in the right place because, you know, this hasn't happened to all these men.
Yeah.
You know, I knew, but I kind of felt how I felt was this has only happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I felt alone.
Yeah.
I felt ashamed. I felt guilty that it had happened to me. Why me? And even though I did have a very strong feeling I was in the right place, it took a while to shift and believe and know that I was in the right place.
So I'm curious too, along with saying this and being around a bunch of strange men, how soon did you start sharing? Did you kind of just sit back for a while and just let a few weeks go by, or did you first night you just kind of just dove right into it, or how was it for you in that aspect?
Well, for me, luckily being in the 12-step program, I for 10 years I'd done a lot of sharing.
Mm-hmm.
Just not on this subject.
Not on this subject.
So I remember being very scared and all those things, but also that I had the feeling if I got it out, I would feel better. So as I remember, and it was 5 years ago now, and knowing me, I was sharing pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
and talking about it. Really, I didn't know what I was talking about.
I was kind of curious because, and this is another question that kind of added on to that as well, is I was just curious how you felt. Now you've done a lot of speaking. I knew that with the 12-step program, and you've already done a lot of other things. But now I hear you're talking about something that you've had to keep buried all these years. But actually, you didn't because sometimes you would just talk about it only when you did that. But your responses would have been different there versus in comparison here. So I was wondering if there's any difference in that aspect. Well, if you're in a 12-step program and you just happen to mention it around other people, and how did it feel there versus coming into around a bunch of strange men? And that's a totally, totally different, if I want to put energy to it or put it atmosphere.
Very different.
Very, very different. So I'm curious, how did that make you feel? I'm just curious. How did it make you
feel? Yeah, in the 12-step program, I might mention it as part of my sharing sort of in passing.
Mm-hmm. In passing.
Most of the time I might mention it after the meeting,
mm-hmm.
you know, and in that instance, you're talking to one person or maybe two people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you might get, and especially from the ladies, you might get a me too, not from the men, as I remember, you know? So really, quite a different experience, speaking in front of, 10 or 12, well, with the facilitators, 12 other people. I was quite nervous. It was quite nerve wracking. You know, the space felt safe and, you know, the facilitators knew what they were doing and, you know, it was two men. So it's all men. You know, I've heard about phase two where there's women and I didn't even want to think about that. How can you do this? You know, it's bad enough in front of all these guys, but how can I do this in front of men and women? But yeah, I was genuinely I just didn't know what was going to happen, you know. And I was nervous. I was nervous. I didn't know how it was going to go. What was, yeah, you know, even though the intake they tell you,
mm-hmm.
it's different when you're there.
It is.
So I, you know, I didn't really look a lot of people in the eye. I think the guy next to me, I might've said hi to, you know, but then when it came time, I can remember it now, when it came time to start, I was frozen,
mm-hmm.
you know, I was just completely frozen, kind of in shock. And it started to dawn on me the road I was on, you know what I mean? The road that I was starting. You know, it just, yeah.
Because I know it's different for other men, even women too. I don't have to be gender specific on this, but for myself, I know that when I came in here and I came in here the first time, and I sat. We were in the kitchen. Our group wasn't 12, but it was 8 and so it was 10 with facilitators. And the group that I happened to be with, well, all the men in that group, I only talked to one now out of the whole group after all these years, because
mm-hmm.
He still comes around the gatehouse to say hi from time to time. But I was amazed how everybody just shared right away. It was just like blah, 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 blah. It was so easy. But the reason why I'm saying this is because even for myself, okay, whenever I talked about this, I was shut down. So this was the very first time I was able to come in, even around a bunch of men. I really didn't give a damn whether men, women, or whoever they might have been. And I just wanted to talk about my experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And when I talk about that, well, this is why I was asking about how you felt, but like what could have been a feeling. Well, to me, it was like, wow, man, this ton of bricks I've been carrying on my back for all 50 years, you know, It's just like it just lightened it after all this time. I still to this day I'm amazed how I felt being able to sit there, and even amongst men. And I didn't trust men either because I was abused on both sides. So I don't trust anybody really.
Mm-hmm.
It comes right down to it. And yet I'm sitting here. I'm opening myself up and not really giving a damn because I just want to get it off my chest. But it felt so damn good. It did. It felt so good. You know, I probably dumped a few tears at the same time, but. Just the fact that I was able to sit there and not be shut down and be acknowledged, it was probably one of the best feelings I ever had.
Oh, yeah. I cried for the first time in front of men at the gatehouse
mm-hmm.
and felt ashamed
mm-hmm.
At first, but then it became easier and easier to cry.
Yeah.
And 5 years later, you know, I can cry now, right? You know, I can cry and if it's appropriate in front of anyone, right? You know, so if there's something that's that sad or I'm talking about or I'm recalling something
yeah.
that, you know, has happened and I've had many, many, many situations in my life because of the childhood sexual abuse and the troubles I had in school, especially in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And getting into the alcohol and drug use, and you know when you're using for a week, you know I'm not alone. I'm with you know people, street people, you know in a hotel. I have the money. I have an entourage, right? You know I'm running a business, and the business was nearby, and the police had carded me. They knew exactly where I was, and they knew who I was because they would frequent my business, you know, not too far away. So when my ex-wife did call, the police said, oh yeah, we know where he is and what he's doing, you know? You know, there were a lot of things that I should have shed a lot of tears over, that were happening in my life. But I was only able to start really doing that, you know, in the gatehouse. It's that intimate. You know, 12-step programs are great for people who are able to, you know, people who want them. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not that you need it; it's that you want it.
Yeah.
It's worked for me. It doesn't work for everyone. I'm not here promoting 12-step programs, that's for sure. But there's a level of intimacy that you get into in the situation of the gatehouse that you don't get into there. But it didn't happen for me right away. You know, I did shed a few tears and stuff, but I didn't really feel the connection because I'd never connected. You know, my abuse happened at such an early age. I lost the connection with everyone, with my brothers, with my parents, with my peers, with my teachers, with everyone, I was unconnected. Some of that early drug use really compounded it. I would sometimes not know where I was and be just walking around and leave school and not realize it. You know, I'm in high school, you know, I do some drugs and I would leave and I would walk the streets and then come out of it, you know, come out of this sort of daze.
Yes.
And, you know, why am I here? Where am I? So a lot of trauma happened and a lot of disconnect that it took me quite a long time to really start to connect, you know, through the phase one, through the phase two, but it all helped, you know, like the icy exterior was melting. And you know, I was getting into the soft core, right? You know, I was getting to the core of the thing. And although I made some great friends and some great connections, I guess really what I'm trying to say is I continue to connect. I continue to cultivate closer, more intimate relationships with people. I have, you know, in high school, every girlfriend I had, we would last a couple of dates, you know, because I just didn't know how to connect, you know. And I really now I have a lot of friends, male and female, who I connect with on such an intimate level that we can talk about childhood sexual abuse. And they trust me to talk about that. So they have an innate and inane knowing that they can be vulnerable with me. I'm not going to tell anyone. And I'm going to be able to empathize with them. And that only comes from, you know, this process that I'm talking about, right? You know, even though I wanted to talk to people years ago, it didn't really transfer right because I wasn't there yet, you know? So coming to the gatehouse, you know, it's like I'm a brick wall. You know, I'm impenetrable, and so it didn't happen for me right away that I felt that I could connect with people. It still took a while. And that's okay because you know, having facilitated here now, I see people who right away they're ready and boom, they let it all out, and I see other people by the end of our 15 or 16 weeks. You haven't seen a lot of change.
Yeah.
But it's like a ripple in the pond.
That's right.
You know, time, and then, you know, you see them again maybe after a phase two, and then some of them become facilitators, and they're totally different people. You know, this is transformative. You know, I came in a shell of a person, and today I feel like I'm a loving, nurturing, compassionate man, you know, and, you know, that's the goal, right? You know, that's the transformation that I've been seeking my whole life, not even knowing how to get there, because not realizing what the problem
is. You know, now you've gone this far and you're into your journey of healing. Now let's talk about a little bit about that. Can you talk about some of the struggles you had through the process of getting to where you might be now, or not even now. Let's talk about the first year, because you've been here 5 years. So mm-hmm. What was your first year like trying to figure some of this stuff out? I guess it'd be a better question.
Well, it was definitely transformative. I started doing the programs back to back. So I did my phase one in the fall of 2013. I did my phase two in the spring of 2014, and I did my first phase one facilitation in the summer of 2014, having taken the facilitator's course. Here with Arthur, who you're going to interview next week. And the phase one, I really was probably the type of person that I described. And I know I was the type of person I described where I came in very rigid. And, you know, if you were watching, you would have said, well, not a lot of change. You know, not a lot's happened. But the seed had been planted. I didn't know that. I didn't really feel much different, but I did feel closeness to a couple of the guys. I still know them today, a couple of them. But I still didn't really have that connection going on, you know, with people. And when I did the phase two, men and women, I saw something that really amazed me, and that's men react to childhood sexual abuse in the exact same manner as women. I thought women would be so much more devastated
or emotional,
but maybe even be a little more emotionally resilient, because, you know, it was always thought that, you know, women, but it's not the case. Men hide it a little bit better, I think, when it comes down to the core, men and women react the exact same way. And that really helped me, because my abuser was a woman. And I got to see that, women weren't, you know, men are from Mars, women are from Venus. No, men and women are the same. And I got to see that, I was the same. And that helped to really change the way I felt, and to again melt that icy exterior. Also, I was fortunate enough to be able to go away for a week to a place called Paths of Courage.
Yes, that's a great place.
And ironically, it was in Belleville, and that's the town we were living in when I was abused. So
I learned something new about that. I didn't realize you were from Belleville.
Yeah. We had moved from Ottawa, where I was born, to Belleville, where my brother was born. That's where the abuse happened. And then on to Whitby and Lindsay and Bolton. So we lived in a lot of different places as I was growing up, which didn't help any with trying to connect. You know, I would know people for 6 months, a year, maybe a year and a half. Then we'd move on because of my father's job. So, I was fortunate to go to the Paths of Courage, and I was there for a week with 10 other men. And there was some connection, some bonding, but again, I felt like an outsider to a certain extent. The one thing that did happen is that I had a suspicion coming into phase two that my abuser was someone from my extended family and not a babysitter who I thought it was. And I found out, you know, as much as I can, 99% sure today of who the abuser is. I didn't know before that. So I had a suspicion. And then when we went to the Paths of Courage, there's a technique that they use a psychological technique, and they want you to have a release. And I was the first one on the first day.
Mm-hmm.
We came on the Sunday, so Monday morning we had this group, and the whole purpose of the first 9 to 11, 2 hours, is to have this this release, this emotional release. And it started building up. You know, who I thought it was who it was because of the way I reacted when I was in this person's presence, because of the way, you know, I felt when I thought about this person. All of those things, you know, just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger until finally this person could see I was in distress, who was leading the group, and she came over to me and she said, just let it out, let it out. And, you know, I had a huge emotional release, something that had never happened to me before. And, but which has since happened many, many times, which is a good thing. And, that was the beginnings of A, understanding, and B, you know, that getting into that vulnerability into the core, you know, of what happened. And so that was right in the middle of my phase two. And so I missed a week. I came back and I was able to tell everyone what had happened. And that, because I was saying before, oh, I think I know who it is. I think I know who it is, but I don't want to believe it. And when I came back, I was able to say, yeah, you know, I'm as sure as I'm ever going to be, this is who it was. And it was because of being able to do that release. And people had told me just how healing and just how transformative the path of courage is. And you know, if you want to go there, you need a reference from a doctor or here at the gatehouse, you know. So you just can't go. You have to be qualified. They only want people who have genuinely, you know, experienced childhood sexual abuse to go there. So you just can't go there on your own. You need a reference, and that's one thing the gatehouse
referral,
did
yeah,
as well.
We
referral.
Need referrals, yes.
Yeah.
And now you're, so
yeah.
You can refer people
that's
there
right.
as well.
That's right.
And by the way, folks, just quickly, Pass the Courage, if you're listening, and of course, obviously, if you're in Canada and this part of Canada, you Google Pass the Courage, and it'll come up in Belleville, Ontario, just as Rick pointed out. And it's not just for men survivors, it's for women survivors as well, as I should point out as well. I just wanted to throw that in there.
Yeah, but at different times.
Different times.
They don't have co-ed there.
It's not co-ed.
Because you sleep there.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
that's probably a good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even though I call myself a thriver of childhood sexual abuse, we're all human.
Oh, I call myself a warrior.
So, yeah, it's probably a good thing that they don't have co-ed there. So that was transformative, and things I wouldn't have found out if I hadn't come to the gatehouse. Absolutely, wouldn't have.
I know. I've never gone there myself, and I had an opportunity years ago to go. It just never worked out that way. And to be honest with you, I can't honestly say that I wouldn't want to go to this day. But I work really hard on myself, and I just don't think it's necessary right now that I need to go.
Mm-hmm.
But I've heard great things, and not that I don't want to go or I wouldn't go, I just haven't had the need to go. I just been getting what I need from people like yourself and other people around the gatehouse.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, again, not everything is for everyone, and there's a few things out there that can help. You know, the gatehouse is one of them, and I think Passive Courage is a very unique place. It's an old yoga studio.
Yeah.
It's huge. You know, and they have all kinds of people in from you know, healing dance, facilitator for that, to healing yoga, to healing music and drums and
very spiritual.
Very spiritual, very, very I had an excellent week. And again, you know, what it does is it gets things out so you can talk about things, you know, so you can get down to your core.
No judgments.
None at all. No, it was a beautiful place, and it was nice too that a couple of people from the gatehouse were going as well at the time. And I had heard about it from other people from the gatehouse who had been there
mm-hmm.
Before. So that was right in the middle of my phase two. And I guess, and by the way, you were the facilitator along with Deb for my phase two.
That's right.
So I'm preaching to the choir here.
Mm.
So.
It's funny how ironic, though. Yeah. The junior group co-facilitating with Deb after that fact.
That's
right.
Right. That's
I should
right.
throw that in there
That's
as well.
Right. Yeah, I did. My first one was a phase one with Al facilitating.
Yep.
Then my second one was a phase two with Deb facilitating. And you and I just finished a phase one in the spring.
Yeah.
So yeah, I've continued along with the Gatehouse. I was doing the facilitating back to back, and then in 16 I started doing them just one a year, and it's 16 weeks, and that's good for me. You know, it's good to give back. It's good to get back into here because, even as facilitators, I get as much out of it as any of the participants. You know, and. And, it's not like we're different from, I tell the guys, I'm you. I just had a weekend or two of training. That's it. You know, and I have this book, you have to prompt me.
Yeah. And just so you know, folks, I mean, I'm sure you're familiar with what a facilitator means, what facilitating means, but our role is pretty simple. Like we had our chance to come in and we did our 15 weeks and then our 16 weeks or whatever. And then now there was two people doing that same thing, facilitating, and their job is to just give an open space, make sure it's safe for all the participants, whether you're doing a co-ed or just one gender, be male or female, is to make sure it's a safe place where everyone has a chance to talk. And that's exactly what Rick did and I did, and we had the same thing done to us. So that's all we're really doing. It doesn't take any special training. The only thing that you really need to be really, really good at is being a good listener. And one of the biggest things we learned from coming to the Gatehouse is getting our voice back. By being a good listener allows that to happen. And that's what Rick and I got out of this.
Absolutely.
That's what Rick said.
It's peer support.
Peer support.
And being a peer is being a friend.
Yes.
You know, it's not being an expert. It's not,
as
you said in the beginning,
yeah,
trying to cure or heal someone.
Yeah.
We do that on ourselves. You know, we heal ourselves. It's a facilitator, which means providing the opportunity, right? Providing the Gatehouse provides the space. Well, we provide the opportunity by, as you say, mostly being good listeners, you know?
So let's talk about what were some of the hardest things you had to really fight by coming here as you become, I know you went to the Path to Courage, but what can you say or describe some of the struggles you were having just trying to get a grip of yourself when you're talking about feelings.
Mm-hmm.
So what were some of the feelings, I guess would be really a really good question. What were some of the feelings you struggled with really, really hard to kind of grasp, to get a hold of, to see what it meant to you?
Well, I remember when we did inner child work,
okay,
which is phase one, when I first started to talk about that, I didn't really know what it was, and I was afraid to delve that deep. You know, I was very scared. I remember, I still felt alone, even though I was in a group.
Mm-hmm.
Even though we were getting into it, and I think by that time we were, 5 or 6 weeks, coming, that really, I remember, scared me, and because that was about me and about the core of me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I couldn't laugh it off. I couldn't sort of joke it off.
No,
you know, I couldn't hide. Exactly. It was getting to the core of things.
Yeah.
And, I felt very, very vulnerable. I told myself this was a secret I was going to keep, that no one else was going to know exactly who I was, inside, right? And that's the first time I cried in front of people, and I think that's pretty healing and therapeutic, and also, being vulnerable like that, and it's something that I was taught that men don't do. We keep our emotions inside. We don't show them. My father, I certainly never, and he's still alive today. He's 81 years old. Never seen him cry. But I'm sure he would like to, you know, but it's just not the way he was brought up, not the way he was taught. And I'm sure, you know, hundreds and thousands of years ago, if you were to exhibit that behavior, you wouldn't last too long.
You'd eaten.
You know, exactly. Yeah, you would be ostracized, and you'd be out in on your own, and you can't survive like that. Whereas today, you know, society is different. We have the chance to do that, and I think that's a pretty good thing, and I think that's why this is happening when it's happening. You know, I think, you know, we have the Me Too movement now. I know you've been talking about that in some of your shows and stuff, and we have all these other things going on, and really, I'm glad we're doing this today, because I'd like to, you know, I'm glad the focus is on male childhood sexual abuse and surviving that and actually thriving that after, because no one talks about that. You know, that's still a taboo. I think this is the last bastion of
shame.
Yes, the last bastion that people, because, you know, we're getting it along racial lines, or people are coming out, you know, with all the shootings, the racially motivated shootings in the States, and that's been going on for a few years.
Forever.
There you talk about, you know, women being abused with the
Harvey
Me Too movement and
exactly.
stuff like that. But men get abused too. You know, men get abused, men get raped, men get abused, sexually abused, almost to the same rate as women. And the abusers, it's almost 50-50 men and women as well. Women abuse children almost to the same rate that men do. And people find that hard to believe, but we know it anecdotally here, because we hear in our last group, we commented on it.
Yeah.
It was 50% of the men, and it was an all men's group.
Yeah.
50% of the men were abused by women,
yeah.
and 50% of the men were abused by men.
Yeah. And that didn't even bring into play of what happens if you're abused by both.
Exactly.
As a child, right?
Exactly. And multiple abuse happens many, many times as well.
It's in childhood sexual trafficking, for example, is a great example. It happens all the time. Little boys being tossed around, little girls being tossed around, but all to what you're saying.
Yeah, and it's almost like it's normal.
Yes.
It's hidden.
Very, very hidden.
But it's so prolific.
Yes, very much.
I mean, it's a third of the population.
Yeah.
That
probably
this
more,
is happening
but,
to.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
In some form or another.
Yeah.
And you know, it's great. I love to see that women are getting justice, because. You know, I think it's been far too long. But you know, the last people to get justice are men, are us, and it's very hard to, you know. And you asked me how I felt. You know, this is how I'm feeling. You know, it's very, very hard to come to grips and to come to terms with this and to get it out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, exactly how I was feeling, especially in the beginning. You know, and it's only through repetitive coming to the groups, that I was able to finally start to thaw out and let go and cry in front of other men, cry in front of other women, tell them exactly how I was feeling. I was feeling ashamed and vulnerable and scared. You know, I was afraid sometimes in my life to go to work. I was afraid to meet other people. I was afraid to date. You know, I just so many different things because of the guilt and shame. You know, and I really couldn't even get a handle on it.
Well, now one feeling we didn't really talk about, and I have to ask, I do have to ask you this, because you're a man, and that is anger. I've never heard you talk about anger throughout our whole conversation this evening so far. Now, where does that anger sit with you? I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that just because you're a man and anger is supposed to sit with you a certain way, but it always, whether you're a man or a woman, anger sits with us all in its own way. So I'm curious how it sits with you as a man. And then what makes it worse for us is that, well, we're stereotyped in how we should react or not react. So I'm curious to see How does anger stay with you?
Yeah, I think I touched on that
kind of.
Certainly in the beginning, saying that I was an angry person, and I felt justified in my anger. I didn't know where it was coming from.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly, because of my behavior, and no one knew why I behaved that way, but I was constantly the source discipline in my home.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in the early 70s and the 70s, you know, corporal punishment was a form of discipline, and
sure.
I got it a lot. So I can remember the principal being angry, my father being angry, teachers being angry, and a lot of people being angry at me. And today I know that's the source of my anger, along with the childhood sexual abuse and being confused, not knowing why I can't feel or am feeling so ashamed that, you know, I have to use drugs and alcohol. So anger, you know, was a big part of it that I tried to suppress. And because I can remember one time I was getting I had just bought, it was the early 90s, and I had bought stereo equipment from a retailer. And I went on a payment program. And the bills were coming in inflated by 100 times. So instead of $68 a month, it was $680 a month. And I was so worried that they would want this money monthly and it would affect my credit rating and everything else. And it was a glitch in their system. It was explained to me, but you know, it happened 3-4 months in a row. I would yell and scream at the poor person on the other end of the phone, right? Who was just at a call center.
Mm.
And you know, today they'll just hang up on you, but at that time they couldn't.
Yeah.
And I didn't know. I was just getting my anger out on these poor people, right? And my marriage was very rocky as well. You know, I was certainly angry, and my wife was angry as well. And so we were a perfect match. You know, it was a yelling, screaming match a lot of the time. And quite frankly, I felt justified. I felt that people were doing me wrong, and that I was okay to be angry. And you know, going through the phase one and two here, and other, you know, like, you know, there's lots of different things. There's, you know, I'm especially glad I saw a psychotherapist for 2.5 years. Part of my abuse was being suffocated. And I was sitting there, and we were starting to deal with that in the sessions, and I was suffocating because psychotherapy takes you back to when these things are happening because it's always there. And I remember not being able to breathe and choking, and the therapist saying, "You're doing really good, Rick. Just stick with it." And I literally thought I was going to die. So, you know, there's many things. I think, and what I hear, a lot of people who come here, you know, have been through some therapy, and that's probably where they heard about it, or another therapy. For me, years of therapy, but, certainly, while I've been here, that led me to doing psychotherapy as well as doing the groups. I remember some days I would finish at the psychotherapist at 5 and drive to the gatehouse to facilitate at 7. Those were some heavy nights. I'd see the psychotherapist once a month, you know, every 2 weeks to start with for the first 6 months, but then once a month. And those were heavy nights, you know, trying to go through that.
Did you feel a little overwhelmed from time to time?
Absolutely overwhelmed. By the time I was driving home, that was it. I was emotionally spent. I was done. But, you know, I'd never gotten to the point in my life where I was emotionally
not
spent
that.
Before.
Yeah, not like
you
that.
Know, yeah, so it was a good thing. I really slept well those nights, that's for sure. But it did take a day or two to recover.
Oh, yes. Like jet lag,
after
right?
That, exactly. So the work's not easy. That's for sure.
No.
But it's worth it because I'll tell you, I can't remember the last time that I was really angry to the point of lashing out, screaming, yelling, raising my voice or anything else. I've certainly been angry, and everyone has the right to be angry. But I don't remember the last time that the anger took over like it used to.
Where it was forefront.
Yeah, well, where it took over. I mean, I had some incidences where, I wanted to throw something or whatever. I don't know what stopped me from doing that. One of my targets was, I'd look at this big TV I just purchased years ago for one of the first flat screens, and I thought, I'll show you, I'll hurt me. I'm really the only one that watched it in that room, and I was going to take something and smash it and then blame the other person in the argument. And although I didn't do that, I came pretty close a couple of times. I've never been violent with another person, although other people have been violent with me. And that's another thing with sexual abuse. I didn't know how to defend myself when I was young. So I was victimized. Sexual abuse is the thing, you just keep getting re-victimized. I was victimized by the sexual abuse. I was victimized by my father. He gave me corporal punishment all the time. My teachers, the principal, everything. I explained that to him a couple of years ago. He was 79 years old, and he gets it. He gets it. Although I don't blame him. This is what happened. I was acting out, but I was acting out because of the abuse. Mm-hmm. So I'm victimized by him. I'm victimized by the teachers. I'm victimized by my peers. I was beat up all the time because I'm not connecting with people. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how to act. I'm the actor. I'm pretending how to act.
Do you think your dad finally got that?
He did. I had a long talk with him. I'd been down to see my cousin in Florida. And he was explaining to me how when he was 14, and my cousin is my age, this was just a couple of years ago, so he would have been 50. And he was explaining to me at 14, his boss's wife seduced him, and she was 30, and he's an alcoholic as well. And I said to him, I said, you were the victim of childhood sexual abuse. And he goes, oh no. He goes, I liked it. And then I told all my friends, I said, hey, you have a 14-year-old son. You're going to tell me if he came home and told me he had sex with a 30-year-old teacher that you'd be happy about that? And he got it. So then I came home and I told my father. I said, cousin down in Florida had this happen. And my father said the same thing. He said, well, did he like it? And I'll tell you, some anger came up. And I said, hey, my son is 14. What if your grandson came home and said a teacher at 30 years old, one of his teachers had sex with him? How would you? Oh, well, things are different today. I said, Dad, the emotions are not different. The emotions are the same. And he started to get it. He said, I guess you're right. We just thought differently back then. I said, I know. It's only recently that the medical establishment acknowledges that men have the same reaction to sexual abuse as women.
Yeah.
So I'm glad you mentioned that. That was a high point in my recovery for sure. Having my father acknowledge my abuse, acknowledge my cousin's abuse, and acknowledge that it has a great effect on people.
And more importantly for you.
Yes. Oh, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. No, I felt very good. It was a point where I thought I might even become estranged from my parents. I thought it was a point where I might not talk to my parents again. And I think everyone's different, but it's a risk I had to take. It's a risk I had to take. And that's part of this thing too. It's a risk. You come in here and it's a risk. not that you're going to be exposed by coming in here, not that kind of risk. People look at a risk and they think of an exterior risk, you know, I might get sick if I do this, I might go to jail if I do that or whatever. It's an internal risk. And those are the only risks that you can take yourself, and that you have to take the first step alone. After that first step, took me a while to realize, but you realize slowly that you have a big support network around here. I mean, you come to the Christmas party at the gatehouse, you can't even walk. It's wall-to-wall people. You know, and this is a big old house.
It's a big house.
You know, this house will hold 30 more participants, or 40 plus staff. Yet at the Christmas party, there's, you know, hundreds of people here. You can't even move. So it's quite phenomenal what goes on here and how safe it is here. But there is a risk. It's a personal internal risk that you take by taking that first step yourself. Some of the people have described those, what is it,
four steps, as
the tallest, steepest steps they've ever taken in their lives. But it's worth it. I don't think I've met one person that's gone through the program. Some only go through pick phase one. They've had enough for now. Yeah. We don't know. We know we have a gentleman here in his
80s. Yeah, a couple. Actually.
Yeah. Yeah, and
actually, we have a couple.
And we know we have people in early 20s who come here. So, you know, it's for anyone, I guess, 18 to...
Well, we have a youth group, which is 18 to 20 to 22.
Yeah.
And then we have the adults.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. So, yeah, 22 to however old, yeah.
100, if you can get those steps.
Yeah.
Or older.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a very varied group of people, wide variety, and it's safe, and I've never seen anyone not get something out of it, for sure.
And one little quick note to what you're saying is that to know with being older, like Rick and I were talking about, like for ourselves and older, both men and women, this topic is really, really, really hard to talk about. Their generation, like, I mean, we're baby, I'm late baby boomer, like yourself, but our parents, like wartime babies, like, you just don't talk about this stuff at all. There's no dialogue for this. They don't know how to talk about this. Don't know how to process it whatsoever. Then I come here and I see men and women too, not just men, in their 70s and their 80s, and I think that's really cool. You know, that they're able to have that kind of strength, and, you know, strength to come here, especially what they were taught.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, probably worse than what we were taught, right?
Oh yeah.
And it's awesome. It's totally awesome. Lots of wisdom to be had from listening to these participants as well.
Oh, absolutely! I can't believe it. Mm-hmm. You know, the one guy who's 67 years old, and that's when he realized what had happened.
Mm-hmm.
And that it was his father who did it. And, you know, he's been a pleasure to be in group with. Just amazing. It just amazes me, the vitality and the transformative power that's here for anybody. But, yeah, you know, it's really hitting home just now. Exactly how much of a risk I took, even though I didn't realize it at the time. Probably because I had, fortunately, done all this 12-step work and really shared deeply and intimately at groups, not about this subject.
Mm.
You know, this is sort of the last taboo, and I'm glad. I think that's changing. I think, with teaching kids at a younger age about their bodies in school, and, the Me Too movement is helping, it's now all of those taboo subjects are going into the dialogue, right? You know, they're here.
And I've mentioned this before, like, for example, Jay and I were having this last week, is we've had the opportunity to go into colleges and universities and talk about this. I've been doing this now for the last 3 years, going into colleges and universities, and I tell you, It's every time I go in, it's I'm just trying to describe how it feels. Well, I mean, for me, it's great to be have a platform to go and talk about it. But to me, it's being able to talk to these younger people. Because in social studies or social justice, in a lot of cases, those are the classes that we're talking to. And not just social justice, we're talking about criminal justice, all the different programs related to, well, social work, right?
Mm-hmm.
And even police officers. And it's really awesome to be able to go in there and talk with these youth, and they care, they want to know, and they're interactive with us, and then sometimes, well, like when I do these suicide intervention training, we have people with experiences that come up,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and they talk about it, where they finally have a platform, or actually, oh, you understand what I'm talking about, and oh my gosh, I'm not alone. I guess this is my point I'm trying to make, right? So even people that young, whether you're male or female, have that same thought. Well, as I thought, and Rick mentioned, kind of mentioned earlier, that, you know, I was alone, but I'm not alone.
That's the whole point. You know,
yes.
I'm only as sick as my secrets.
That's right.
Now I don't have a secret.
No.
And, you know, I'm talking on your radio program now. I'm quite open, if it's appropriate,
yeah.
in social situations, admitting to people, because you can almost tell in a crowd, you know, someone who's not looking people straight in the eye,
right.
They seem to be disconnected, etc. And you start talking to people, and I can't tell you how many times in the last 5 years this has happened to me, especially even in the 12-step programs, which is a reason why a lot of people get into this. You know, cross the line into this problem because they have the root problem is trauma of some kind, and you know, being able to talk to people about it is very therapeutic. It's very open, and so I went from a victim. I describe myself as a childhood sexual abuse victim to a childhood sexual abuse survivor. When I went through phase one and phase two here, and now that I've been facilitating for a while and have had many people come and do intakes to come into the gatehouse, one of the people just recently that I talked to is now doing their phase one, a woman I know. And so now I'm a thriver because now it feeds me. Now it's a totally different experience. You know, I can't say that I'm totally unashamed. I can't say that all the guilt has left.
You can't say you're not
cured.
Know,
I can't say I'm cured. It's a lifetime thing. But as I go along, incrementally, I get better and I feel better. And, you know, that I'm able to talk to people openly, you know, is just an amazing thing, right? And you know when it's appropriate. In the beginning, I talked to people who, like my family members who weren't abused, and they're like, okay, that's enough. Because it's hard for people to take, you know? And, you know, now you start gaining a little traction in that. And, you know, when it's appropriate to talk to who, for how long, and when. And that's very gratifying. You know, to have good, solid conversations with people and, you know, not make it so much about me either, right? You know,
mm-hmm.
to make it more about them.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's where the real power comes
from
this program.
It is, totally.
Is making it about others. You know, giving of yourself freely what was given to me, you know? And we're all volunteers here for the most part, the facilitators. So, you know, we tell people, too, thank you for being here and participating. And they don't get it at first, especially in phase one. Don't thank me. I want to thank you. Because without you, I wouldn't be here healing more and growing more and thriving more. And without you, there would be no gatehouse. There would be no next set of people. Because if you're not here, we don't get the funding to continue. We don't get the people to continue doing things. So what a unique perspective, going from a victim sitting in that chair, scared to death, to a thriver, being able to think of others first before myself, being a giver instead of a taker, you know, because that's what we're taught. We get something very, very special taken from us when we're abused, and we become takers because that's the only way we know how to survive.
Yeah.
Secretive and inside ourselves. And this gives me, this has given me a chance to get outside myself, you know, and to thrive. What a difference. You know, I'm getting a little emotional now. I can't believe the change. You know, first getting off the booze and drugs, I thought when I finally figured after a couple of years in a 12-step program that, you know, if I kept on with this, I would probably never drink and use again. And so far, so good. I thought that was, you know, an amazing thing, because I'll tell you, as a lot of people can appreciate, that kind of life is no kind of life. And but I couldn't have imagined how much more free I am, being able to give back just a little bit of what was given to me here at the Gatehouse. It's amazing.
That's totally awesome. Well, I think we'll leave it on that note. You kind of gave a great message to the end, so of hope is what I'm trying to say. See, this recovery process, it's possible to move forward. And Rick's a great example of what I've talked about, and what I've even talked about for myself. Same thing like with Jay last week. And next week, we have Art coming in, Art Lockhart, founder of the Gatehouse, 20 years in June 21st. And lucky for me, I've had Art come on every year as long as I've been here. And this is my fourth year doing this. So, by the way, yeah, 4 years, Jay.
Congratulations.
Thank you. 4 years doing this. And Art, and then as it stands now, I do have a few more men that would like to come in. I have one agreed, Tommy, which will be in on the 14th. I'm waiting on two others. So I'm going to try to cap it off around 5-6 men. I'm going a little bit further, but you know what? These gentlemen want to come forward. They want to talk about their story, and I really believe it's going to help other men, and even women too, help them come forward with their abuse that they received as a child. And as we pointed out, you're not alone, and we're here to help you through that process. So, folks, I want to thank you for listening. I want to wish you a good weekend that's coming ahead. I really encourage you to listen next week as well. Like I say, Art Lockhart will be coming in. excuse me, he'll obviously be talking about his story and how the Gatehouse came into play, because we're celebrating our 21st anniversary. Art is a survivor himself as well, which he'll talk about.
It's a great story.
I just love when he talks about it, and it's very inspiring, and I'm sure you will get. So folks, take care, self-care, have a wonderful rest of the week. Actually, tomorrow's Friday already. Have a wonderful weekend. I will see you next Thursday. Thank you, good night, and thank you, Rick, for coming by.
Thank you very much.
Bravo.
Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
There we go.